This morning we are going to continue on looking at our study on the different parables that Jesus told. Now, we aren't necessarily looking at everything that may be classified as a parable. When you start looking at what some people call a parable, they'll say anything that uses the word like or as is a parable. But it has been my desire as we've gone through these is to look at the parables that kind of our expanded pieces of reading a little bit to where Jesus was trying to show something spiritual by looking at it in a physical way, relating that truth. And some of the parables that Jesus has told, as we can see, have been very practical in nature, teaching things about prayer, the persistence of prayer, or maybe as we've been talking about in the last few weeks, being prepared to meet our Maker. Other parables, like the kingdom parables that were given, to teach a spiritual teaching primarily to the apostles and can kind of confound the rest of the crowds there, so to say. So as you look at the kingdom parables and some of the others, you'll find some of them are very debatable in the meaning because Jesus didn't tell us the meaning of it, and it's a little bit hidden, so to say. So those are a little bit more debatable. But fortunately today, we're not in one of the debatable ones. This one is pretty straightforward and a very familiar one to most of you as well. Now, by the way, today marks our entrance into our last pod of these parables. If you'll recall, I've kind of divided them up along the way into subjects. This is our last pod, and I've entitled it Miscellaneous because it's just a hodgepodge of different things. And there's about five of them that we're going to be looking at. Today is the first one of these. Now, the first one we're going to look at here in this pod then is found for us in the Gospel of Matthew. And if you would, you can be turning over there. As a matter of fact, you can be turning over to Matthew in chapter 25. And the reason we're going to start with this parable today in this group is because it follows right after the parable that we talked about last week. So we're going to kind of build on some of the things that we talked about last week as well. Now, again, our parable is going to start for us in verse number 12. But as we consider that, we also, or actually verse number 14 is where we're going to start at. But before we get there, we want to consider the context of the parable that we're looking at here. And as we do so, we need to back up a little bit. And as we back up a little bit, we're not backing up just to the beginning of chapter 25. But again, as we saw last week, we have to go into chapter 24 to understand exactly what is leading us into these parables that Jesus is saying, because we have a continuing dialogue going on here. So in Matthew chapter 24, verse number 3, we read the words, "As he said on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, 'Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age?'" So the apostles had a desire. They wanted to know when was the end coming. What should they be looking for? And Jesus, after this, goes through many signs of perilous times, times that will culminate there in the Great Tribulation. And then he begins to wind down the words of chapter 24. And again, remember that the chapters and the verses in the Bible are not divinely inspired. They were put there for man to be able to find things quickly. So maybe we wouldn't necessarily divide things the way they are right here, again, because we got to go back to the previous chapter to get the context. But as he begins to wind down chapter 24, he says in verse 42, "Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the goodman of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom the Lord hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing." And that little description right there is going to probably lead us a lot into the thought of the parable that we're looking at today. But then he goes on and he speaks about the destiny of those who are not ready for his return. But we see in these verses here, the mood is about the disciples being ready for when the Lord comes back and being of service indeed until the Lord comes back as well. So as chapter 25, as we turn the page over to chapter 25 again, we start off with that parable of the 10 virgins, which we talked about last week, which again, in its most simplistic form, is all about being ready for when the Lord comes back, to be ready for His coming. And today, as we look in this parable, the idea of the coming of the Lord is still there, but the focus is going to change from being prepared for His coming to diligence of service. Diligence of service. So, what we want to do is we're going to read through this parable. We're going to go through verse by verse, and we're going to look at the physical teaching of this parable, and then we're going to come back and look at the spiritual application after we do that. So let's begin reading again in verse number 14. It says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods." So here we have a man who is going on a trip. He undoubtedly has some wealth to him. Not only do we have the fact here that he has given servants, but when we look at the fact that of the talents that he left behind, we know that one talent was equal to about 16 years of pay for a normal person. So with the amount that he leaves back in the hands of his servants, the five, the two, and the one, that is about 128 years worth of income for the normal person who lived in Israel. So the fact that he was able to leave that behind and knowing that now he is now going on a long journey, and we know that he must have had money to take with him on that journey, we know that this man was indeed of considerable wealth, at least much more than the average person there in Palestine who lived essentially from day to day. Now, as you think about travel in this day and time for this man who's going away on this journey and think about it compared to today, we kind of lose perspective because we are spoiled today when it comes to travel. You know, even if we drive somewhere, you know, most recently my wife and the family, we went out for Thanksgiving in Illinois. And that's about a 9-hour trip for us. It's somewhere close to 600 miles, so 9 to 10 hours of driving. But you know what? In the days of Christ, just that trip alone would have taken over a month to do. Just over a month to do that. Now, so when people traveled on a far journey, they didn't travel for a month or 2 months or however long it was and then spend a weekend somewhere and come back. They didn't even spend a week and come back. If they were going to go that far on a journey, they typically spent some time wherever they were going. And certainly, it would not be unexpected for someone of considerable wealth to go and to visit a place for a year or even more so here as well. And that's kind of the scenario that we have, that this man is going on this long journey. He's going to be away. And he's left his servants here with some money so that they can run the estate, basically, while he is gone, to keep things going, to keep the money flowing. You know, when I do take a trip, for me, and maybe some of you others who have been self-employed, Brother Greg, as he's had his dentist office for sure, probably, but when you've taken a trip, I don't know, did you close your office altogether or did it stay open? And some of the gals work and do cleanings and stuff. You know, most of the time in our office, we're kind of limited in what the people can do. But, you know, my doors stay open because, you know, they have some ability to help people out, and we want them to do that. Some are more talented than others, certainly in what they're able to do. But, you know, shutting down is not really something that we desire to do because even when I'm going on vacation, the electric bill still comes. So we have a desire to try to keep the money coming as much as we can. That's what you have to do when you're in business for yourself. Shutting down altogether is really not an option. So this man leaves some money with his servants in hopes, indeed, that they will continue to grow the estate while he's gone. Now, in verse number 15, "And unto one he gave five talents, to another two, and to another one, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. I suppose you don't get very far in business before you begin to learn to trust certain workers more than others. You know, you have certain employees in your office, and you know that some can handle more than others. Some are able to work more than others. Some are just better or more productive at what they do, and some not so much. And you start to learn people, and you start to learn what their abilities. And that's okay. Everybody has different abilities, and as an employer, you come to expect that. But this man, as we look at him, he knew the nature of his servants as well, because he willingly gave one 5 talents, he gave to another 2 talents, and he gave to one talent. And, you know, some people in the workplace might say, well, that's not fair. He should have given to everybody the same amount. That way everybody could have, you know, had an equal chance to do well. But he did not do that. Why? Again, because he knew the ability of his servants. He knew what to expect of them. Some might say, well, maybe he'd have been better off. You know, today everything's about teamwork, getting together and do it as a team. But again, no, everyone had to stand on their own 2 feet on the end when it came to presenting what they had done with their money. So he gives them the money. He hits the road. Now, what do you think his servants do? Well, the good news is they didn't take the master's money and head south when he went north. That was always a possibility. These men did not do that. They also didn't throw a party and have a good time with the master's money. So we're thankful for that as well. But look at their responses here in verse number 16. It says, then he that received 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. And likewise, he that received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. Now, notice the one with 5 talents. His response was is that he went at once. He did not delay in going out to start working and investing his master's money. Even the one with 2 talents, the scripture says likewise. So he did the same thing. Even though he had less, his desire still was to go out and to make more money. So that's what he did. Now, we don't know what they did. Perhaps it was the trading of goods, perhaps the buying of property and selling, you know, the whole buy low, sell high thing. Whatever it is, though, they all went out immediately, and they did not stop until the master returned. That's a good point, right? They did not stop their activity until the master returned. This third servant, though, he is altogether different in what he does. He took the 1 talent that was given to him, and he hid it away. Now, in this day and time, there's no savings, what do you call those things, those little boxes, savings box, safety box, whatever those things are. I don't have one. I don't have anything to put in it. You know, they didn't have those back then. They didn't have vaults, so what they would do is they would bury their money in the ground, right, and hide it away. And so you had people all over Israel and all over the ancient world. That's what they did. When they came into money, they would bury it in the ground, and hopefully it would be there when they came back to find it. Now, that's what this master, or what this guy did, this servant did. He took his master's money, and he buried it away in the ground. But that was not his master's desire, was it? I mean, think about it. If the master wanted just, you know, his money back in a year or a year and a half's time or whatever it is he came back, if all he wanted was what he gave him, he might as well have kept it for himself. There was no need to give it to the custodialship of this servant. He expected this guy to go out and at least to try to continue make some money while he was gone. This guy, though, he goes out and he spends 15 minutes putting the money in the ground and thinking to himself, that should do. And then for the next however months that it is till the master returns again, he just lives the good life doing his own thing, his own will. Do you think he knows what the other guys are doing? Absolutely. He knows what the other guys are doing. He knows how productive they're being. But you know what? Maybe he reasons in his mind, well, you know, master didn't expect much of me. I just have that 1 little talent. As long as I don't lose anything, I'll be all right. verse number 19. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. So again, here we're not talking about a few weeks or even a few months. We're probably heading into a year or more. And you might even wonder if the servants began to question whether the master was ever going to come back. You know, certainly you'd have to wonder that sometimes if it had been an extended period of time, unless there was some kind of correspondence going back and forth between them, which would have been difficult in a day without the kind of mail service that we have today. But certainly they might have wondered, well, maybe he died. You know, should we even continue on? Should I just spend the money for myself, whatever it might be? But again, they might have wondered, was all this labor worth it in the long run? But eventually, and they didn't know the day, and they didn't know the hour, but eventually the master came back. The master came back, and like we've seen in prior parables at times before, he calls his servants in to settle the accounts, to see what they have done, to see if they have been faithful in serving him or whether they have been slothful and self-serving. So again, let's read. Verse number 20. And so he that received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. He that received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. So as we look at these servants here, we've looked at the first two, and we see that both the first and the second double what the master gave them. And you can imagine this would make the master happy indeed. You know, while he was gone, they continued to work, and they continued to work diligently, and however long he's been gone, whenever he comes back, he finds that, you know, his money has been doubled by both of them. And both of these men, then the master knew indeed that they had his best interest at heart, right? You know, when somebody is going out of their way to produce for you, and you see the fruit of that when you come back, then you know that they are in it for you, that they have a desire to be of service to you, that they're not just slacking off and going through things half-heartedly. These men were diligent till they came, until the master came, and so he promised them a reward for their service. And I love the phrase, well done, good and faithful servant. And folks, there are not any sweeter words that I can ever imagine hearing from the master than those right there. And then we get to the third servant, the one who took the money, the talent that he had, and he placed it in a field, buried it, and then spent however long, again, satisfying whatever desire he had. In verse 24, it says, then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid. And I went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast this that is thine. The master, as you can imagine, is not nearly as pleased. You know, it wasn't that the man went out and failed. That he tried and failed, I should say. The man didn't even try. The man took what the master gave him and he buried it away. And at this, you can see the master is not pleased, and he becomes angry. Because, you know, even though he knew that this guy was not going to perform with the same level as the others did, he still expected him to perform. And he had more than enough time to produce something. So in verse 26, he says, "His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest, therefore, to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury." The master has trained his servants. He has taught his servants what to do. How they knew how to make money. It wasn't the fact that he just left them blindly. He didn't do that. He entrusted them with the money. He entrusted them with the skills. If this man would have just taken the one talent and went to what their version of bankers were in the day, they would have at least paid interest on the money. And then when the master came back, he would have had a little more to show for it. It might not have been doubling the talent, but it would have been something. But this man was content to just make excuses. To say, you know, I know you're a hard man, and I didn't want to lose your money, so I didn't want to take the chance. He's doing nothing but making excuses. So here we see the rebuke of the master beginning in verse 28. It says, "Take therefore the talent from him and give it to him that hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant to outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now, verses 28 and 29 are easy enough to understand. Those that worked for the master were certainly rewarded with more. Verse 30, though, takes a different tone altogether, and most of it is attached to the spiritual application. We often see Jesus do that at the ending verse of a parable. He'll begin to speak a little bit more about the spiritual application. But as we look at this man and see that he was cast out, I want you to understand this from right now. This man who was cast out was never truly a servant at all. This man did not care about his master. He did not care about his master's money. He did not care to do what his master desired him to do. So let's consider the spiritual application of this text. To do so, let's jump back to verse number 14. Again, we have a wealthy man who is going on a journey. Who is that man? Well, I hope by now, in the course of these 20-some parables that we've looked at and the several people that we have seen going on a journey, that we don't have to question very long before we know who this man is. This man, of course, is none other than Jesus Christ. And this journey began in Acts chapter 1, verse number 9, when he ascended into the clouds there at the Mount of Olives. Where did he go, indeed, on that journey? Well, that's the wonderful part, isn't it? In the Gospel of John, chapter 14, verse number 1, it says, "Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also." That is indeed where our Master has gone. He has taken that journey into heaven, and one day he has the promise, indeed, that he will come back again. But right now, that's where he's at the Father's right hand. So now we need to clear up who the servants are. And this part is a little bit tricky. You see, it would be nice to blanketly say that, well, the servants are all the saved. And certainly all the saved are his servants, but there are there's more to it than that. Do you remember back when we started this journey together and we were talking about the kingdom parables there in Matthew in chapter 13? And when Jesus Christ was presenting these parables here, we found out that there were some believers in the kingdom, but there were also some deceivers in the kingdom. There were those who believed, and there are those who made false professions. You know, so I know when we think of the kingdom of heaven, we think of it exclusively as the saints. And spiritually it is, because he knows who his true servants are. But the kingdom that Christ presented for us in the Gospel of Matthew is certainly one that is mixed in nature of having believers and those who have made false professions. Just think of the apostles themselves. Again, one of the apostles was not saved from the very beginning, right? Judas was a devil from the very beginning. He was a false professor. He never was a true servant. He didn't have, indeed, the greatest will of the master in his heart. His desire was the purse. He was never a servant. So what is the distinguishing mark of those who are really saved and those who are not? How do you tell the wheat from the tares? Well, you tell the wheat from the tares by the fruit that they bear. Right? It's all about the fruit. And those that have no fruit are not truly servants. And that's truly the mark of the servants that we see here in this parable itself. We have one who was given 5 talents, and he went out to do everything he could immediately to gain more. He produced fruit, and he doubled what the master gave him. The one who had 2 then took the 2 that the master gave him, and he produced 2 more. He had fruit in his life. And then we have the one who produced none at all. Why did he not produce? Because he was a bad tree. He's a bad tree. A bad tree cannot produce good fruit. By the way, a good tree cannot produce bad fruit. It has to produce good fruit. So when we come to that last servant, who does he represent? Well, he had no fruit. He had none at all. All he did was give back what the master gave him to begin with. So now with our characters in perspective, the master being as Christ, the servants representing those who are saved and producing fruit, and those who are unsaved, the ones who are producing no fruit. At this point, then, we should be asking ourselves, what's the significance of the talents then? What are the significance of the talents? Well, remember, the talents belonged to the master, and they were given to the servants. And these, I believe, represent spiritual gifts. And here we're clearly taught that some are given more than others. You know, the Bible gives us several different gifts, and we won't go into all of those. We've done those in other messages. But there are several different gifts that certainly the Lord gives to his servants. Not everyone is given the same gifts. Not everyone is alike. You know, when God brings us together as a church, he tempers us together. And some have certain gifts, some have other gifts, so that we might complement each other, so that we might fulfill the need of the whole. Some are maybe given 5 talents, and we need those kind of people because they need to exercise their gifts in leading us and instructing us. Some may be like the one servant who had 2 gifts, and we need those kind too. Probably most of us, we maybe have one kind of dominant spiritual gift, and that's okay, because guess what? Even though we may just have one, God still expects his servants to use the one. To still use it as best that we can. The spiritual lesson of this parable is not who has more and who has less. The spiritual lesson is that the master is going away on a long journey, exactly what Christ has done, and now some 2,000 years later, we are still waiting for his return, but our job is not to go out into the parking lot and hold hands and look up into the sky and sing Jesus is coming soon, right? Our job is not to stand around and to do nothing. Our job is to use the gifts, the talents that God has given you. Use them while you have the chance. Don't wait for tomorrow because tomorrow may be too late. The Master is coming. The Master is coming soon. And we may not know the day. We may not know the hour. But we need to be using the talents that he has given us. And let this be a lesson to the youth who may be listening to think to themselves, you know, a lot of times they think to themselves, you know what, I've got time to invest in my talents later. Right now, I'm young. I'm going to enjoy doing what I want to do right now. No, the Master is coming, and if he's saved you, even if you're 5 or 6 or 7 or however, the Lord has given you some small talent, and he desires you to invest it and to use it. And you know what? The more you do, the more it grows. And the more you're given. And let it be a lesson, of course, to our older ones as well. Because sometimes as we get older, we tend to think, you know what? Somebody else needs to do it. Somebody else needs to do this. You know, I've done it long enough. I'm tired. I need a break. But guess what? God has still given you talents. And these younger ones, they still need your example. They still need to see you in action. Because you know what, folks? You can retire from your job, but you don't retire from being a Christian. You don't ever retire from that. And if God has saved you, you have some talents he expects you to use. So this parable is all about not wasting your time to give what God has given you. So that someday you'll hear those words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." But very briefly, the parable is also a warning. Because if you find yourself surrounded by Christians that are serving the Lord, and that really isn't the desire of your heart, if you don't have a desire to share the gospel with others, if you don't have a desire to see others saved, then perhaps you need to rethink what you call yourself. Because you're not a servant at all. You may fool everyone around, but you will never fool God. Judgment will come, indeed, someday, when the Lord comes back. So have you trusted in him? I hope that you have. Because I believe that Jesus is coming soon.